Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements, and we'll be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Fall is definitely here.
It is.
We've had a little bit of weather come through. Actually got cold.
It did get cold.
Yeah. It did.
And then we were up in Reno last week for a trade. Last week?
Yeah.
Last week for a trade show. And we got out of there just before the storm hit this week. So
With the snow up there?
Yeah. Looked beautiful. Right. All up through the Sierra. Actually, there was snow up there. I was surprised. Not a lot of snow, but there was snow up in the higher elevations, but it was gorgeous up there. Oh God, it was beautiful. After the trade show in Reno, we took off and went up to Lake Tahoe for a few days, and the aspens up there are just spectacular.
The fall foliage, the canyons
are just painted with gold and yellow. And actually, even flying up, we flew right up over the Sierra on the way into Reno and looking out the window of the plane, you could just see big swaths of gold and yellow on the sides of the mountains as we were flying up.
So. It was, we were in Nashville and St. Louis and it hadn't 2 weeks ago and it hadn't start changing yet. We were surprised. We were thinking autumn in the mid South, we might see some color, but as we got closer to St. Louis and Southern Illinois, as we drove, we saw a little bit of change, but it got me thinking, and maybe later today we can talk about that, fall foliage plants for here.
For this area,
what you would plant if you're looking for that kind of color as you get into autumn and your pumpkin spice lattes.
And all that. we do have classes today in San Diego. It's going to be fall bulbs with Kathleen, and that's at 9:00. And Poway, it's going to be palms, care, and culture, care, culture, and varieties with Greg Opkenorth, who we had on the show a while back. And he is the head grower for
Grubb and Nadler
up in North County.
And a palm expert and a half.
Yeah. Yes. Palm expert extraordinaire.
Right. Yeah.
He's forgotten more about palms than I'll ever learn.
That is probably true for me as well.
He and I chatted. He is very excited about coming and doing this class.
It should be a very good class. That's going to be at 9:30 in the Poway store here. So 9:00 in San Diego for fall bulbs and 9:30 for palm trees here in Poway. You know, when we were up in Northern Nevada and Northern California, when we left Reno and headed over to Lake Tahoe, we went west over through Truckee and then up to a little town north of Truckee that I had read about, had never been to before, Nevada City, an old mining town about 40 miles north of Truckee. Absolutely beautiful place. It is like a living ghost town, just picked up and stuck out in the middle of a forest. It is a really, really cute little town. I would highly recommend, if you're ever up in Northern California and you're looking for places to explore, I would highly recommend going to Nevada City.
I'm going to age myself here. Did the Cartwrights on Bonanza, didn't they go to Nevada City?
That was Virginia City.
Oh,
Virginia,
which City. I have been to as well.
Yeah, which is another great town.
Fun place. That's in Nevada.
It's
a little bit south of Fallon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Another garden spot.
I've
spent quite a bit of time in Fallon. It is a garden spot.
If you like the ghost town experience, if you haven't been to Bodie is the one.
Ken's a big fan.
Oh, yeah.
In the Sierras. Yep. Oh, man, is that a great place to
That is an absolute bucket list thing to do in California. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
It is absolutely incredible. Absolutely amazing. The history, everything. It is a really, really neat place. I would highly, highly recommend going there sometime if you haven't been there before. But while we were in Nevada, one of the reasons why we went to Nevada City was we went north of Nevada City about 6 miles to Malakoff Diggins State Park. And that's an area, it's a state park, obviously, that was heavily mined during the gold rush back in the mid 1800s using placer mining, which is placer mining was where they would take these enormous water cannons, and they actually have one in a on display in Nevada City called Monitors, and they would just scour away the hillsides with these water cannons and wash all the dirt and gravel down, and then extract the gold that was in the that was in those deposits. An unbelievably destructive practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, in absolutely incredible what how it changed the landscape up in that area. And it was so destructive that the state of California banned it in 1872, and they quit doing it after that. But wow. Just astonishing what it did and how it changed the landscape. So if you're ever up in northern in that part of California, I highly recommend going over and taking a look at those areas. They are really really interesting areas. But the fall color up north was just it was just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And we had absolutely perfect weather at in Lake Tahoe. Which if you haven't been to Lake Tahoe, that's another another place to check out. It is incredible. It's a huge lake, absolutely huge, and just beautiful. Both sides of it. Part of it is about a third of it is in Nevada, and about two thirds of it is in California. But all around, it's a wonderful place to go. Mm. Some absolutely beautiful scenery up there.
I've never been, but I've flown over it countless times.
Yeah, highly recommend it. Couple of my favorite restaurants in the world are actually in wow. Lake Tahoe and in State Line. Mm-hmm. Some fantastic.
Well, speaking
places.
Of fall color, I mean, it's great to see fall color elsewhere, and I like to go to Utah and Mammoth and all those places. You get to see all the aspens turning yellow this time of year. What do you guys think are the best choices for San Diego fall color?
My top choice would probably be liquid amber.
Okay, that's a good choice.
That's a good choice if they don't get the disease.
If they don't.
Amber's Duracifolia. I like that. I like probably my favorite would be Pistacia chinensis.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good
Chinese
one.
Pistache trees. They're that's very well behaved. They turn dark, dark purples, yellows, oranges, and they look fantastic.
Another good one, since we don't have aspens down here, is ginkgo.
Ginkgo biloba, yeah.
Okay, I have to tell you this ginkgo one. My wife, every time we see ginkgo, and I'll say, do you know what that is? And she'll say, yeah, it's the, don't tell me, ginkgo balboa. And we had that joke. So when we were in the Missouri Botanic Gardens, every time we saw a ginkgo, we joked about it being a balboa. And then I came back here and saw some, and the first thing that came into my mind was ginkgo balboa. I could not think of the correct term.
Yep. Yeah, Bilboa.
It's the maidenhair.
Yeah,
Chinese maidenhair. And those are beautiful.
They really are. I mean, it's you don't get a lot of variation in the color. It's all yellow.
Right.
It is canary yellow when it turns, and the foliage falls when it's yellow. It doesn't turn brown before it falls. Mm-hmm. It is a beautiful tree. But it's the is it the male ones that you don't want to plant in your yard?
Right, that have that smell
scent.
Yeah.
An aggressive odor.
So very funky.
Yeah. So if you're interested in buying a ginkgo biloba for your yard, maidenhair tree, make sure you get a female one. But I believe most of the ones that are in production are cut and grown and are female. I know the one, I don't know if Monrovia still grows it or not, but they used to, I think they grew one under the Majestic Beauty name.
I think you're right. Very good color.
Very good color. And they were all female. I think they had a dwarf one too.
They did.
We have a small one that we maintain over by the pond at the railroad here in Poway.
Mm-hmm.
Another good one is the ash trees. Some of the ashes can be quite lovely.
Although they can get out of hand.
Depending on the variety. But some of the females will give you a lot of seedlings, mm-hmm. lots and lots of seed, but they're gorgeous. And then yeah. another one is red buds.
True.
Some of the red buds yeah. can yeah. give you some really nice fall foliage. Mm-hmm.
And they give you really early color in the springtime mm-hmm. too. Right. They right. will bloom before the foliage comes out.
Crepe myrtles to a lesser degree, but some
yeah,
of them.
Some of them yep. are very colorful yeah. for foliage. Yeah.
Not to mention summer flowers, but.
Sure.
Yeah. yeah. You know, it's, you can get fall
so
color
we,
out
we
here.
We can do it here.
You can mm-hmm. do it. You can't do it like you can in upstate New York. But,
no.
But,
no.
You know, and if you haven't been to New England or the Northeast in the wintertime or in the fall to see it, it's, I never understood what the big attraction was to it until I went back there in October, and now I know.
Now you know
it,
why.
Now yeah. I know why.
I grew up there, and it is spectacular.
It really is. It is. It is. It is something else. But you know, then again, we just don't have that many trees here.
No,
compared to back east.
No, and it's noticeable anytime you depart from anywhere east of the Mississippi, or actually east of Oklahoma, and you start coming back here, you'll. Just flying over, you notice the marked difference.
It thins out. Yeah.
Right. That's a good way to say it.
It thins out a little bit. But yeah. So yeah, if you want fall color in your yard, you can do it. You just have to be a little bit selective, but it's not going to be what it is back east, but you can make a reasonable substitute.
I was going to say with perhaps a dense planting of a number in one section, you could make it look kinda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is the saying when things are not quite as a Timu? So it'd be a Timu purchase of mm-hmm. fall foliage.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Very, very, very close. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements and George Allman. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. Yeah, we were talking about traveling. You know, one other part of the Sierra that we went through while we were up there that is really pretty. And it's not an overly traveled road, but we left Lake Tahoe one day, drove down through Gardnerville and Minden, Nevada. Also beautiful, beautiful parts of the country. The Washoe Valley down around Carson City. Incredible, incredible country down there. But you drive south from there on 395 and you end up at Topaz Lake, which is right on the California and Nevada border. And you go just a little bit south of that into California and you get to Monitor Pass. And Monitor takes you up from the bottom of the valley up into the Sierra to a little town called Markleyville. And Markleyville is a really, really cute little teeny town. I think there's 130 people that live there. They have a fantastic restaurant, the Cutthroat Tavern. Highly recommend stopping there for lunch. But it's tucked down in this little valley that's just, as I was saying, just completely covered with aspens. Really, really beautiful, beautiful area. And then you just drive up north from there and you end up in South Lake Tahoe. So, and then you were traveling also, George.
We did. We went to Nashville for a wedding. And one of the highlights of that trip, besides the wedding and seeing friends, was going to the Grand Ole Opry, but not just for the show, which we saw, which was wonderful, but there's a convention, a resort and convention center within, or adjacent to rather, that is 9 acres of enclosed garden, enclosed tropical plants. You have 50,000 plants with these meandering paths and waterfalls and even a river where there are boat rides. You can take in this river and get a tour and listen to, you know, narration about the facility as well as all the plants. There are 20 full-time interior horticulturalists that maintain it.
Wow.
And, it's kept at 68 to 72 degrees, 55% humidity. And one of the things that struck us, well, really struck Capri, was every time we turned, because there were all these meandering paths, as I said, every time we turned, she would go, "I have never seen such beautiful plants anywhere," because they were so pristine. There was nothing wrong with them. No, I'm sure that first thing in the morning or in the middle of the night, there were, you know, gardeners out there, horticulturalists pulling any brown leaf or whatever, but it was spectacular. It was very well maintained. There are ficus and banana trees and palms and 60-foot palms. anyway, spectacular. So if you ever get the chance, whether you go to the, you know, if you're a country music fan or not, adjacent to the Grand Ole Opry is this huge Opryland resort and convention center that is well worth walking through.
You said
and restaurants within as well.
It's the Gaylord Resort.
Yes.
Yeah. Same company that built the one down in Chula Vista.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Wow. The new Gaylord, which if you haven't been down there to see that, oh my word, it is unbelievable what they built down there. It is absolutely incredible. Definitely worth going down to see that as well.
9 acres of meandering paths. You sometimes like, okay, how do I get back to
piece of property to put under a building.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And they're in some of the venues, because they're different, I'll use the term rooms of garden. The hotel rooms that are part of this convention center have balconies overlooking all of the different planting areas. So
it's really
neat. Yeah.
Oh, Melanie's been wanting to go back to Nashville. So
there you go. Great opportunity.
Going to have to go back there and check that out.
And then, of course, we did the Missouri Botanic Garden, which you have to do if you're there. It is gorgeous.
I'm not familiar with the Missouri.
We talked about it before. It's one of the biggest botanical gardens in the country. One of the oldest.
Yeah, okay. One of the best in the world.
One of the best. Acres and acres of stuff.
Really?
And very well, also very well maintained, but obviously it's not indoors. So you do have, you know, a little bit more natural looking plants outside and the weather, just a tremendous place to visit. If you like, even if you don't like plants, just from a walking around, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. One of the places that I know I've mentioned in the past too, is talking about conservatories, the Butterfly Conservatory in Key West is a must see if you're ever down in that area. It sounds like very much like the Gaylord Conservatory. Everything in the Butterfly Conservatory is absolutely immaculate. I mean, which is really interesting given the amount of butterflies that are inside the conservatory, and none of the plants are eaten because none of the plants that are in the conservatory are host plants.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't lay eggs, and there's no larva. So nothing gets eaten.
One of the things I love about Missouri Botanic Garden too, the director was a friend of mine. They have an encyclopedia online. You can look up plants on their website. And one of the things I love about it is one of the few places I've ever seen that actually gives you the proper pronunciation. People are always asking, is that Brassavola or Brassavola? Or, you know, and depending on which Latin expert you speak with. But I love it because it sort of dispels the controversies about proper pronunciation. You can just look it up at Missouri Botanic Gardens website.
Oh, that's interesting.
It began in 1850 when we talk about something being old. Yes.
You know, the other one that I would like to go to at some point in time, and I've actually used them as a resource either for the newsletter or our newsletter here at the nursery, and also we've talked about some of their things here on the show, is on Brooklyn Botanical Garden.
Oh yeah.
Back in Brooklyn. Looks amazing from what I've seen online. And I my son lives in Brooklyn, so I need to go back there. I'll go back to the botanical garden and maybe I'll see him while I'm back there too. So we'll see. But and their website, the Brooklyn Botanical Garden website, I think it's bbg.org. Fantastic resource. Really, really good website. They have some very, very interesting articles there. So if you're looking around for something to do or something to research, check out the Brooklyn Botanical Garden website as well.
If you end up in Brooklyn, look for that tree that's growing there.
There you go. That
tree grows in Brooklyn?
Well,
I think there's more than one. I'm not sure which one it is.
If I remember correctly, in the book is a tree of heaven, which no one likes.
Yeah, nobody likes. We don't want that.
Right. That's not Malia, is it?
No.
No, it's
Ailanthus.
Ailanthus.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with that one.
And if you get back to New York, you should also do the High Line, the garden. If you've never seen that or heard of it. Oh, so that was, what was his name? Ulf Peterson? It's fantastic. It's on the old rail line that used to, the elevated train. And they've turned that into a garden. Or Pete Udolph, that's who was the designer. And it looks great year round because they put in things that look really terrific in fall or in winter, and they leave the grasses, and it's an experience. You really should see that.
It's less than 2 mile walk. It's like a mile and a half walk.
Wow. I'll have to check that out. I'll tell my son about it. Have him go take a look at it as well.
He's probably done it.
He may very well have. You brought in some stuff for us to sample today.
I did. Speaking of New York, although this is in Ohio.
Yeah.
It's a Rome Beauty apple. So what's nice about this is, you know, we talk about chill hours a lot. A Rome Beauty is a 1,000 hour chill. And you're
that's high chill.
And you're looking at apples that we grew here in Poway.
Wow.
The tree is going on 3 years old now. Very productive.
Beautiful.
And Rome Beauties are gorgeous looking apples.
They're not big.
Well, not yet. It's still a relatively small tree. And,
okay.
And one of the things as a gardener you're supposed to do is cull or thin. And I did not thin this tree. So there were probably 40 this size on it.
Wow.
Which are it's a mid-size apple.
Tennis ball.
Right.
Had I thinned it
a little bit, we would have had some larger apples. And next year I'll be a little bit more. But I wanted to get maximum small fruit to taste. And because I wanted to pick them throughout the early part of the season to see if they're, when they're actually ripe, fully ripe, because this is the first big year of fruit on it. They're supposed to ripen by early November. But they're a delicious apple. I grew up with these on the orchard back east. And adjacent to this, I have a Macintosh apple.
Two favorite pie apples.
Which is another pie chill. I think it's about 800 or 900 hour. And it also has fruit. I didn't bring any in for you today. Maybe next week.
Now, how many fruit are on the Macintosh?
That's a little bit fewer. There's probably 20.
Okay. Yeah. Still respectable.
Yeah. Still relatively young and small trees. So they don't have as many fruiting spurs on it yet. But within the next couple of years, it should be very productive.
That's pretty impressive to get that much fruit out of a thousand chill hour
apple. So we've said it many times, John, you know, we've talked about it. Apples are very adaptable. Our friend Tom Spellman has done things over the years, experiments. And in Irvine, there's a test field where they grow many fruit, but particularly apples, and look at the kind of yield they can get in warmer climates with what are traditionally high chill apples. And clearly, so far, it's been working. I have three very high chill apples on the property, and they are producing fruit.
You know, it's talking about chill. It's interesting that one of the fruit trees that just really seemed to be very sensitive to chill hours was cherries. And for a long time, we didn't sell cherries because they were, you just wouldn't get any fruit production out of them.
Right.
They were very, very sensitive to chill. Fortunately, the hybridizers have taken care of that, and there are low chill cherries that will produce very well in milder climates. I don't know that there's any that'll do a tremendous amount on the coast, right on the coast, but even just a little bit inland, there are varieties that that will do very well for you now.
They say that Royal Crimson would fruit at about 150 chill hours, I've read. So
that's super low.
That's very, very low. Yeah.
What's nice about Royal Crimson is it is a self-fruitful one as well.
That's another.
And it will pollinate the Royally or the Mini Royal. So if you put all three of those, or what happens a lot is years ago when people were purchasing the Royally and the Mini Royal, and one of them would die, but they don't know which one. I used to have both of these. One of them died. I don't know which one I should get to help pollinate. You buy the Royal Crimson.
Sure.
And that way it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter which one
it was. Behind, you will get pollination.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements and George Allman. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson. Along with George Allman and John Clements, we're talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. We were talking about deciduous fruit trees. We were also talking about deciduous trees. And one of the things that really surprises me in California, where we seem to be, I would almost say, hypersensitive as to what goes into the water or washes out into the ocean, which for good reason. But one of the things that concerns people is the amount of foliage during the wintertime that gets washed out to sea or gets washed into storm drains and things like that. But it surprises me, with all of the concern about that, how many municipalities around Southern California plant deciduous trees in parkways or in major landscaping. We were talking about it during the break. Scripps Poway Parkway is a prime example of that. It is lined with coleopterias, and those things drop foliage and flowers like you wouldn't believe. They constantly have maintenance crews on Scripps Poway Parkway cleaning that up to try to keep that stuff out of the storm drains. Although, you know, that's just kind of the cycle where.
How do municipalities, cities, towns throughout the rest of the nation, like east of the Mississippi, I don't remember that ever being a concern where I grew up with hundreds of thousands of trees dropping leaves in the fall.
Yeah.
And storm drains and water runoff infrastructure. So,
well, when we were in Watkins Glen in late October a couple of years ago, the Watkins Glen Gorge is amazing. It's absolutely spectacular. And there's a river running right through it. And all it is deciduous trees. And they're all turning color and all the foliage has fallen into the river and washing to somewhere. I'm in Watkins Glen. I'm assuming it's going into, it's probably going into
the Hudson
or one of the Finger Lakes. It's not Geneva.
Well, there's Lake Cayuga.
Lake Seneca is right there. Yeah, so I'm sure it's probably flowing into Lake Seneca. And actually Lake Seneca is completely surrounded by forests of deciduous trees. So it's probably part of the life cycle of those lakes too.
It's
just part of it. But yeah, you know, the Home Depot up the street, all the trees in the parking lot are deciduous trees. So I just find that interesting that when you're so concerned about what's going into the storm drain that you're planting things that are going to dump into the storm drain.
I think I could argue the other side of that, where it's because it's a leaf and not car oil or, you know, batteries.
That's true.
Then you know, it's part of nature and they're going to be, like you said, John, they get broken down and they're used for food sources or nutrients in some manner. So
To some extent. Yeah. And like you said, it's better than brake motor oil.
I'm a fan of leaves falling everywhere and letting them become part of the soil. That's why when you go back east, or the soils are so rich and there's nitrogen there, as opposed to here where we are constantly having to supplement nitrogen because we just don't have that organic material breaking down in the soil.
Yeah. And we had some very good friends that had property up in up by Mount Cuyamaca, and we used to go up there with them from time to time. And I remember walking around, and it was covered with oak trees, and walking around under the oak trees. And it's like walking on a sponge.
Shag carpet.
There's just so much litter underneath the oak trees where the foliage falls down.
Well, there used to be, 40 years ago, 45 years ago.
Years old then, right, John?
Yeah. Oak leaf mold
was huge.
Yeah. And I used to incorporate that into my cymbidium mix for the orchids. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic stuff.
It was really good stuff. We used to get it from Kellogg's when Kellogg's was one of our big suppliers. And then I was talking to our sales rep at the time about it. And when it disappeared, I said, "Are you ever going to get it back?" And he said, "No, the guy that we used to get it from retired." And he said, the guy had this huge van, and he would just go up into the mountains and just shovel the oak leaf mold into his van and take it down to Kellogg's. And then they would bag it up. But yeah, I haven't seen oak leaf mold on the market in years.
We had a couple bags from some vendor here probably 5 or 6 years ago, and that's the last I remember seeing it.
I think that's probably about right. You know, another one that's gone by the wayside, and it disappeared right about the time that COVID hit, was cocoa mulch.
Yes.
It was just we ran out of it and it was gone. And apparently we tried to do some we tried to do some research to find out what happened to it, because it's not like they quit making chocolate. But whatever the company that made it sold to a new company, and the new company was doing something else with it. I don't remember what it was, but that was a beautiful mulch.
Yeah, it was
really, really pretty. Although it, as soon as you put it down and the first time you water it, and it would get that really light mold on top of it. But you just went out and raked it a little bit. That was the end of that. And then it looked fine after that. It did get kind of a bad rap for a while. And I think most of it was
anecdotal hype.
anecdotal hype, urban legend. I know we took some criticism from people about it. The claim was that dogs would eat it and they would die, because dogs, chocolate is not good for dogs.
Right.
It can, in large amounts, it can be deadly to dogs.
We lost a dachshund that overdosed on a pan of brownies.
Oh, really?
And literally died. Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. But when the controversy was really, really raging, a friend of mine was a vet here in San Diego at the time. So I asked him about it, and I can't remember the name of the chemical that's in chocolate that doesn't agree with dogs, but he obviously knew about it. And I asked him about it, and he said, I've been practicing for, I can't remember if it was 25 or 30 years. He said, I've never seen it. He said, that has never come into my clinic. But he said, let me talk to some of my colleagues. So we were in a networking group together. And so I ran into him a week or two later, and he said, I asked around about it. And he said, out of all of the people that I talked to, he said, I had one colleague who may have seen a dog who had gotten ill, but basically just upset stomach. And he said, and that was maybe, he couldn't tell for sure. He said it was possible that might've happened. So I think some of it was, like you said, just a little too much hype on it. And don't get me wrong. I mean, and we would just tell people, if you have pets and you're concerned about it, then don't put it
down.
Don't do it.
Sure.
It was relatively easy to work around, but that was a neat mulch.
That was beautiful.
It smelled nice.
It smelled like a chocolate factory.
It smelled really nice. Yeah.
The other thing that was interesting about it too, is that it would naturally bind itself. So once you put it down, and once it got wet, it would kind of glue itself together and hold itself in place. It was also somewhat deterrent for cats too, because they didn't like walking in it once it got down and got wet, because when they would walk on it, it would stick to the pads on their feet, and they didn't like that. So it could be somewhat of a cat deterrent as well. But yeah, that was another one that's gone by the wayside. I think, you said you used the leaf mold in, Cymbidium mix. I think camellias. They used to use it a lot.
And azaleas.
Camellia and azalea mix. Yeah. Really good stuff.
Is that just for the organic portion, or is it also an acidifier?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, Tom Nuccio up at Nuccio's.
Oh, yeah, Nuccio's.
Camellias,
yeah.
And, rhododendrons, now gone, sadly.
Yeah.
They used it in their mix too,
back
in the day. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I haven't noticed it so much lately. I'll have to look and see if they're still doing it or not. But Monrovia Nursery, at least in the at their Oregon yard, which has now become officially their headquarters, they have completely divested themselves of Azusa. They have left California.
Wow.
As far as their headquarters is concerned, they've been transitioning up to McMinnville for some time now, and their headquarters up there is unbelievable. They have moved up there, but they were using pecan shells
Ooh,
as a top dressing. Yeah, and all their stuff from Oregon would come in and had a layer of pecan shells on top of it. And I used to see it on their camellias a lot too.
Interesting. I bet that would be good. Yeah. I bet walnut shells would be good too.
I would think so. Oh, you know where they use ground up walnut shells a lot? Non-skid. You can buy it at I used to be able to buy it in bulk at San Diego Marine Exchange.
Oh, no.
They would sell ground up walnut shells, and then you just mix it with epoxy and smear it on boat decks, and you either don't slip, or if you do,
you cut your foot open, you get
torn apart, one or the other, the deck of an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, you don't want to get blown down on that. Yeah. While we were in Nashville, we went to one of the Civil War cemeteries, and speaking of walnuts, there were tons of walnut trees with big walnut pieces, not the shell, because you have the outer shell first.
The husk
everywhere. Wow. And then they were pretty big, and they were dropping as we were walking through. And like, you could end up in this cemetery if you're not careful. Wow.
The other thing about walnut husks is that they stain.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I have some family that lived up in Northern California, up in Placerville, and one of my cousin's friends, their property was on an old abandoned walnut orchard, and in the summertime, she and her friend would go out looking for walnuts. There's tall grass underneath all trees because they weren't maintaining the orchard. So they would just go and stomp around barefoot under the trees, and their feet were always black from the husk.
Yeah.
But walnuts, that's a really, really pretty tree too.
They're gorgeous.
And good
fall color.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is about trees with pinnate foliage, but I love trees with pinnate foliage.
Yeah, I do too.
I think it just adds a really nice look to it.
And we do have a California native walnut, Juglans californica, and the Native Americans used to use that tattooing. So the black, they would actually use that to tattoo.
Oh, interesting. I did not.
There's a lot of them.
You learn something new every day.
Especially, hopefully, that's why we're here. Right? Yeah. We had a lot of them up in Lemoore when I was stationed up in Lemoore in the Central Valley. Mm-hmm. Even the local high school had them planted all around the perimeter, and big walnut groves everywhere.
Tons of them in Paso Robles. I think there used to be more walnuts in Paso Robles than there are grapes, and they started taking the walnut orchards out.
Orange County used to have very massive plantings of walnuts, too. We planted
a huge walnut orchard at Valley Lane Farms in Rancho Santa Fe for C. Arnold Smith.
Well, the old Bing Crosby estate across from Chino's in sort of that's Fairbanks Ranch verging into Rancho Santa Fe. Yeah. There's still an extant remnants of a walnut grove right there.
Oh, we'll have to go up and
one of the few I know of that's still around.
I'll have to go up and check that out.
You just made me think of something when we were talking about using them for non-skid. We also use them for cleaning engines.
Yes.
Walnut shells for blasting engine material. Pieces. Yeah, because it's soft enough not to damage, but hard enough to knock off a lot of carbon deposits and such.
There you go.
Boy, you learn something every day.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way.
Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. Yeah, just before the break, we were talking, one of the things that we had mentioned was Monrovia Nursery. They are heading into their 100th anniversary next year. 2026 is going to be their 100th anniversary, and they put out a publication about their 100th anniversary, and it gives the history of the company and some of the plants that they've introduced over the years, and there's been a lot, but some of the more popular plants. But we were honored, I would say. They had small blurbs throughout the publication from their customers. We were one of 12 across the country that was selected to be mentioned.
Cool. That's very nice.
And I think I've mentioned on the show, we are able to trace our business relationship with Monrovia Nursery back to 1946.
Wow.
And that's as far back as the records that we have go, is 1946, but at least the 1946.
So you, you spent 18 years as a nursery before you bought from Monrovia then?
Apparently so. We started 2 years after they did.
So, yeah, wow. Yeah, because the internet wasn't as robust back then and they didn't know about them. Yeah.
So our rose list is now available online.
Yay! For the rose list.
For the next season. So if you want to check that out, you can go to walteranderson.com, go to plant lists, and you will find our rose list. And it has everything that I don't say that we are getting this year, but everything that we are expecting this year.
What we've ordered.
What we have ordered, which is not always the same thing as what we get in. One of the big ones there is just drives us crazy every year, and we've mentioned it before, is David Austin. When they started, the availability of David Austin roses just went completely south when they decided they were going to do it all themselves, when they stopped contract growing, and they just have not been able to get a handle on it. So
great breeders, bad growers.
Yes, not good on the production side.
Well, the nice thing about using our list is, hey, it's on the front page of our website, but there are colored pictures that you photographs you can that you can look at, get a better idea of just the description. So it's very useful.
Yeah. So what we did this year is we ordered pretty much everything that David Austin had in their catalog, knowing that there's going to be quite a bit of it that we're not going to get. We figured it was better to order a bunch of stuff and have some stuff not come in rather than order a few things and have stuff not come in and then be really short. But consequently, the quantities that we're going to have on David Austin stuff that we do get are not going to be huge. So if you like David Austin roses, shop early. As soon as they're available, come in and get them. Because we just don't know how many or how much we're going to get. But the other thing that's going to be coming up shortly, Melanie's been working on it this week, and I think she's almost done with it, is our fruit tree list. Bare root fruit tree list. And as soon as that is available, that will go online, and you can start taking a look. We do have a couple of new growers that we are getting some stuff from this year, so there will be some interesting new additions. I would talk to Adams about it, but he is in Alaska right now. But he will be back in a couple of weeks. But he was going through and picking out some new stuff to bring in this year.
Always my favorite time of the gardening year.
Oh, me too.
Fruit trees.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm there as soon as those trees arrive.
What's amazing is how every year we have this conversation at home about, we're not going to put anything else in because we have a lot. You guys have been
there. We have 80 trees, George?
I think more than 80. We have a lot of fruit trees, but every year it's like, well, maybe this one because I don't have this or I don't have this variety of this. No.
Well, you should just start grafting stuff onto other trees.
We have
and
done
do
that
multiple
a little
grafts.
Bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you don't have to plant another tree, but you can still get the stuff.
That's true.
I was watching, I come up with this stuff on YouTube. I found a segment on medieval fruit, and some of the stuff I had no idea what it was. But there were a few things that were interesting. And one of the ones that I'm going to have to look and see if we can find it. It sounds very interesting, although it sounds like it might be a lot of work, is medlar. Are you familiar with medlar?
Yes. No. It was on one of the earlier things that you find yourself watching. We talked about it maybe in the early part of the summer.
It produces fruit in late fall, not a great looking fruit. And apparently when the fruit is ripe, it's not really edible, but you can basically controlled rot it.
Bledding.
Right. Yeah. And once you do that, then it apparently tastes like a cross between spiced apples and dates, which is an interesting combination.
Well, that makes sense.
Maybe just have spiced apples and dates rather than a rotten piece of fruit that you're trying to get there.
That's a possibility.
Get right to the edge of that. It's in the rose family.
Is it?
Okay.
That makes sense. It makes sense. The fruit looks good. The fruit does look kind of like that.
Like a rose hip.
Yeah.
It looks like a rose hip.
Yeah. A large rose hip. So that was one I was going to do some snooping around and see if I could find one somewhere.
I think someone here locally, maybe Jacques, our friend who has a big food forest here in Poway, I think he may be growing some. I'll have to check with him.
No, I'll have to check that out. Because they produce late fall. Yeah, and then you let it rot through the winter, and then early spring, it's ready to
Just ready to go. Rot through the winter. Yeah. Sounds so good.
another one that was very popular, jujubes, imported from Asia, into Europe. And there again, that's another one. They don't do anything for me, but
very drought tolerant.
They are.
They're actually a pretty tree.
They are nice. I had them at the botanic garden.
They're pretty aggressive. Though, I remember as seeing suckering. Them
up there. They sucker everywhere.
They sucker like
they
crazy.
Really? All over the place.
We have a GA866 and a sugar babe. What's the sugar one?
And, I know which one you're talking about.
We have both of those, but that GA866, it is suckering throughout the yard.
50 feet in all directions.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds like a running bamboo.
Yeah, and thorny.
Sugar cane.
That's they are thorny.
Yeah. It's like pomegranates that just want to sprout up everywhere.
Go everywhere.
Yeah.
Another one that was on the list, which really kind of surprised me, was loquats.
Yeah, that is a surprise.
Although we sell a fair amount of loquats as fruit trees, probably more as ornamentals than fruit trees. And there's a few different varieties. Mm-hmm. It used to be gold nugget was the only one, named variety that you could get. But now there's a few different ones.
Big Jim Advance, I think, is one.
Jim was a local guy.
Oh, was it?
From the rare fruit growers.
Rosacea. Yeah. And they can get Fireblight, if I'm not mistaken.
They sure do.
I think anything in Rosacea.
Well, true, but they are susceptible to it.
Yeah. When I was growing up in Bay Park, our next door neighbor, he had two huge loquat trees in his backyard. And when the fruit would ripen on them, one of them was really tart and tangy, and the other one was just like drinking sugar water. It was so sweet. And I remember my next door neighbor and I, we were really good friends. We'd go over to his yard and we would just eat loquats until we got sick. I mean, we ate so many loquats as kids. It's not even funny. But it's a pretty tree.
It's a nice looking tree. It's a nice evergreen tree.
And you can make tea out of the leaves of loquat.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
I did.
And it's actually fairly palatable.
That's not a ringing endorsement by any means. Yeah. It's fairly palatable.
Fairly palatable.
But that's a fruit that you don't see in, you might find it at farmer's markets, but you don't see it in a grocery store. It's not a good production one. Another one that was on there, which I absolutely beautiful tree, the fruit doesn't do anything for me, is arbutus, the strawberry tree.
Well, let's go back to John's previous. That's
just because it's edible doesn't mean it's palatable.
No, back to your, it's fairly edible. What did you say? Fairly edible, barely
palatable.
There you go. So that would be the same for the arbutus.
Yeah. It's like eating slightly grainy sandpaper,
like wet sandpaper.
Yeah, it's
very fine sandpaper.
Pretty trees, but not delicious.
Yeah, see, that's kind of...
It would keep you alive. That's what we're,
And that's what
in the Middle Ages, it's probably important.
Yeah, and like we said, it's better than eating dirt.
If the Black Plague didn't get you, you're eating everything, probably.
Yeah, probably. You know what the fruit kind of reminds me of? And I've never been a big fan of it, is strawberry guava. I don't like strawberry.
I don't like that one either.
Yeah.
Very seedy.
Kind of seedy, mealy.
Mealy. I was going to use mealy.
Yeah. Just not a, that doesn't.
Pretty trees though. They take a prune really nicely if you want to do some artful pruning. And the trunks can be gorgeous. It's a bit like crepe myrtle.
Oh, the arbutus. Oh yeah. The trunks are
arbutus too.
The arbutus are really pretty with that.
Especially Marina.
Reddish bark. Really, really pretty. I think we were talking about it before we came on the air. I think there's a huge one in the courtyard at Mission San Antonio up in Northern California. Mm-hmm. A really big one up there. It was really, really pretty. Another interesting one that was in this program, Slowberry, S-L-O-E. Mm-hmm. And apparently it grows in hedgerows over in England and Europe. It's all over the place. It's a little blue, looks like a grape almost, about the size of a grape. Apparently very sour when you when they ripen, but that's where they would get sloe gin from, which I don't think I've ever had sloe gin.
Also in the rose family.
Is it really?
And it's in the Prunus genus.
I didn't know that. So, yeah. So, sloe berry. Or you could just go and buy sloe gin.
You've never had sloe gin fizz?
I never have. For whatever reason, I don't. I can't tell you why.
They look like blueberries growing.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it does. It doesn't have that kind of frosty color to it.
No.
The coating on it. But it looks like a pretty plant. Another one, which we sell them usually as ornamentals, barberry.
Yeah.
Was another big one, or medieval fruit. And barberry was one of the ones that was on the list of banned fruit that in parts of the United States where you're not allowed to grow it, or at least some varieties of it.
Some varieties. But it can be invasive.
Yeah, it can. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be back next week with another hour. Don't forget classes today. Fall bulbs in San Diego at 9 o'clock and palm tree care culture and varieties in Poway at 9:30. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.